and being prepared for what the job is going to do to you. In terms of how do you then handle even more of the crap or the just, there's no good parts of narcotics investigations. I mean, there's just no good.
Welcome to the Cops and Writers Podcast. On this show, you will learn how to write the best crime-related novel or screenplay possible. Your host, Sergeant Patrick O'Donnell, worked the streets in one of the nation's largest police departments for over 25 years. Ride along with O'Donnell and his expert guests as they help you navigate the oftentimes confusing and misunderstood world of law enforcement. O'Donnell and his guests on this show do not represent any law enforcement agency. The content of this show is not meant to be legal advice. You think you need a lawyer? You probably do.
Hey, Cops and Writers, thanks for being here with us today for another episode of the Cops and Writers Podcast. I'm Patrick O'Donnell, and I'll be your host for today's show. This show is listener-supported, so thanks to all of you who keep this show going. I'd especially like to thank those of you who are patrons of the show, most notably Francis Sheldrick, Kathleen Donnelly, Fran Cross, Catherine Kovacic, Richard Tolles, Ryan Ta, Carl Vandero, Melinda Colt, and Jody Burnett. Your generosity helps pay for the software, equipment, and my time producing this show. Yes, you too can become a patron for less than a cup of coffee or a pint of Guinness. Just go head on over to patreon.com/copsandwriters. Are you a crime writer seeking to infuse your stories with accurate and compelling law enforcement details? Earn the credibility your work deserves by mastering the intricacies of police procedure and criminal investigation with My Police Procedurals for Authors, Cops and Writers from the Academy to the Streets, and Cops and Writers, Crime Scenes and Investigations, available in Kindle, print, and Audible on Amazon. If you're interested in actually seeing these interviews, head on over to YouTube, to the Cops and Writers YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe and like my YouTube channel. For those of you who already have, thank you. Welcome, everyone, to part one of my two-part interview with former sheriff deputy, now attorney, Bridget Truxillo. Life isn't fair. We have all heard this, and it is so true. But sometimes you come across a story that really pulls at your heart, and you learn a new level of empathy for someone who is in a certain situation. This episode did that for me. This is a story of a person being treated unfairly and her resilience and eventually overcoming in her own way. This is the story of Bridget Truxillo. Bridget Truxillo was a deputy sheriff in Florida where she excelled at her job, earning spots on the elite narcotics unit where she was primarily utilized in undercover operations and later joined the SWAT team as the only female to have worked in SWAT for her agency. Unfortunately, Bridget was the victim of harassment, discrimination, and retaliation, forcing her to eventually resign from law enforcement. She then went to law school, where she earned her Juris Doctorate. Bridget is now an attorney that has her own law firm that specializes in helping law enforcement officers and first responders fight back when facing the same issues. I believe this interview will surprise you in ways you never thought possible. Please enjoy this sometimes shocking and emotional interview with Bridget Truxillo. Bridget Truxillo, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let's start out with where you got your interest in law enforcement from. You know, where did it all start?
Well, if anybody's ever heard me talk before, they're going to be tired of this joke. And it's not kind of sort of a joke that I joke and say that I watched G.I. Jane and I thought it was really cool. And I said I was going to shave my head. And no offense to any Navy SEALs out there, because even back then, this is dating myself. This is back when a woman would never have even been allowed to try out for Navy SEALs. I think you can now, though. Has that happened yet? Anyway, I thought G.I. Jane was cool. So I thought, oh, I'll do that. But really, that's a joke. So nobody in my family's ever been in law enforcement before.
Okay.
I'm aware of. I mean, my dad's family, he's first generation American. They immigrated from Sicily. I joke and say that maybe I had some relatives in the mob. So maybe that's as close as I got, but, no, they thought I was nuts. I was about a month, I don't know, last semester, really close to graduating at the University of Florida. in environmental horticulture. So I have a degree in plants.
Okay. What were you going to do with that? I don't understand.
Well, I really didn't know. I just needed to get the wanted to get the stupid degree and move on. I enjoyed exercising, and when I was in my 20s and thought, well, I don't know if I'll always be motivated for this. I mean, now I'm in my late 40s and I know I'm still motivated to do it. So I can tell my
20s. More so. Yeah, it's more important now.
Yeah. And so back then I thought, well, I don't know. Maybe I should get a job that requires me to be fit. So like I don't want to do the military. But I thought, you know, maybe law enforcement. And then so my idea was to get maybe FBI, DEA, something federal. So I decided to go the local route to get there, to get some experience to make me marketable. And also that I'm a super dork when it comes to like right and wrong, you know, constitutional law. Like I'm a dorky American. I believe in our country, I think it's cool the way we set ourselves up, that we have this constitution that governs what we do and the separation of powers in our country. And I think, you know, if you break the law, there's consequences and you should be held accountable for that. That's because that's how it keeps our country safe. So I liked that I would be able to participate that in somehow. And now I'm an attorney, never. Well, when I went to college, the movie, what was that movie with Tom Cruise that he was the
Few Good Men?
No, when he was the tax attorney and they ended up running off to like the Cayman Islands.
It was John Grisham.
John Grisham. Yeah. That one. Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. That's a great movie.
I'm having an old lady moment. But anyway, that movie, I just read the book and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'll go be a tax attorney. And then I realized what that meant, because I was like, okay, most tax attorneys probably don't run off to the Cayman Islands. So then went to college, had no idea what I wanted to do. But anyway, if you had told me when I was graduating from the University of Florida that I would somehow become an attorney, I would have told you you're nuts. But I also liked the idea of not having a job that was going to put me behind a desk every day. You know, I just didn't see myself being a 9-to-5, punching the clock, hamster wheel kind of thing. So All those reasons. And I chose to do law enforcement. My family thought I was nuts, but, you know, getting a job and working hard and off I went.
Yeah, that was my next question. You know, what mom and dad say? Hey, I'm going to be a cop.
Yeah, he thought I was kind of nuts when I said, oh, I think I want to do FBI or something. And then I was like, well, I'm going to do the sheriff's office to get there. He definitely thought I was nuts when I went to the undercover narcotics unit. And then definitely thought I was nuts when I called to tell him I'd tried out for a SWAT team. So he was not happy about that.
Okay. What did your mom say?
Not really. My mom probably was like, oh, Bridget. But she didn't say much. I mean, I distinctly remember, I can remember where I was sitting in my house at the time. I called my dad and said, Dad, you're never going to believe what I did today. He's like, what, honey? I said, well, I tried out for SWAT team. And I totally thought he was going to say something like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I'm so proud of you. But no, his response was, oh, Bridget, isn't it bad enough that you're on the narcotics unit, or, you know, that you do narcotics or whatever he said. And I'm like, what do you mean? It never even occurred to me that, you know, when you're young and dumb and you think like, yeah, I buy and sell narcotics to people, but I'm, you know, nothing's ever going to happen to me, you know, I'm bulletproof.
And so you're 10 feet tall and bulletproof. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Nothing will ever happen to me. That's other people. So it just never really occurred to me that by being on SWAT team, I would be putting myself in even more danger. But yeah, he wasn't happy about it.
Oh boy. So did you grow up in Gainesville?
No. People say, where are you from? And I say, I'm from the South. I'm primarily from Louisiana. I was born in North Louisiana. And then I'll say this, second grade, we moved to Missouri. Third grade, we moved to, no. Yeah. Second grade, Missouri. Third grade, Oklahoma. Fourth grade, Arkansas. Moved back to Louisiana in seventh grade. And then I finished high school in Louisiana. And then I moved to Florida when I went for college.
Wow. Yeah. You went to the home of Tom Petty, Gainesville, Florida.
I did. Yeah. I love that in your email. Not many people know that. In fact, one of his songs, which of course I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it right now, mentions Beatty Towers. And that is two of the most popular dorms on campus at the University of Florida, which I did not live in, but I know. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm a huge Tom Petty fan. I've seen him probably about 15 times.
And
I saw him about 6 months before he passed away.
Oh, yeah. That's a bummer. That's one of the ones I wish I would have seen. But yeah, I never saw him.
Probably one of the best, you know, like garage bands ever. Yeah. Just no frills, just plain old rock just and roll, man.
Yeah.
And yeah. I loved his attitude, and there was a great biography about him. And that's where I learned about, you know, like Gainesville, Florida. Mm. His first band was Mudcrutch, and they played a ton of frat parties and sorority parties.
Oh, yeah. He probably came. I'm trying to remember. By the time I was in college, he was pretty big, so he wouldn't have come back to play like any kind of local, you know, just fair or something. But
you're way too young, because I think it was in the 70s when he started. It was like the mid to the 70s.
Thank you for saying that. Although, I mean, I feel like I'll be 50 next year. Like, holy crap, how does that happen?
it happens really quickly. That's how it happens. Dang. But yeah, you're still a pup. You wind up going to the sheriff's department. Can you say which one? Mm-hmm. Which one?
Yeah, Alachua County Sheriff's Office. I'm proud of it. I mean, I definitely had some struggles when I was there. Okay. Hence why I am went to law school. But I'm very proud to say, like, the reason why that I got SWAT team is because of my captain. The reason why I got paid to go to the academy instead of just having to scrape by on ramen noodles, which I feel like, in hindsight, the amount of money I got paid, I feel like I was still scraping by on ramen noodles. But at the time I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. I'm getting a salary to go to. And it was not very much. I mean, I got a raise when I went full-time in patrol, and the starting salary was $27,500. And I was making less than that when I was in the police academy, but I was like, hey, I know I'm making some money. But
year was that when you got hired on and you were in the academy?
2000.
Okay.
I graduated from University of Florida in May of 2000, and 1 week later, I started the police academy. I had made that decision in that spring. Didn't really know, because I had no background in law enforcement. I ended up going to, I knew somebody that worked at the sheriff's office, and they were like, well, hey, why don't you just do a couple of ride-alongs? So I went and met the lieutenant who was in HR at the time, who ended up being captain overall of patrol, who ended up being the man who forced them to put me on the SWAT team, because they couldn't give them a reason why they wouldn't put me on, other than me just being a chick. And then, like, he was my champion the whole way. Now he is now the interim sheriff at Alachua County Sheriff's Office and running for sheriff. And I am not afraid to say, I know maybe we shouldn't get into politics, but I'm saying that everyone in Alachua County should vote for Emory Ganey for sheriff, because he is a very fair-minded and really good sheriff. Now, you can't make people happy all the time, all the people all the time, but I think he's a very fair man, and would be very good for Alachua County. Anyway, I did a couple ride-alongs, went to the police academy, didn't know necessarily that I was going to go to Alachua County, but then at the time he was trying to get more college grads into the sheriff's office. And so the timing worked out that he's like, hey, if you wanted to, we'll pay you to go to the academy and you come to work for us. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had no plan. I didn't know where to go to get a job. So that worked out. So I ended up living in Gainesville for 15 years. No, 12 years. I was in Florida for a total of 15. I was in Gainesville for 12.
Okay.
Through college and the sheriff's office.
Now, the academy in Florida, they have like central like training facilities, correct? It's a little bit different than other places. Could you kind of explain that?
Right. So like Houston, where I live in Houston, Texas now, like HPD has their own academy, and everybody that goes through their academy, is like they run it, it's their people, and everybody goes to their department. Ours was run through the Santa Fe Community College, and you could go to anywhere after that, as long as you just pass later you have to pass the academy, then pass the state exam, and then you can get hired somebody anywhere else. Now, a lot of them do go to Alachua County or Gainesville Police Department, where Alachua County, Gainesville sits inside of Alachua County. But we're just a central. So it was, people went to all over Florida after that.
That's what I thought. Now, how big of a department is Alachua County?
I think at the time, and certainly it's probably grown a little bit, although the captain or Sheriff Ganey told me that they were way understaffed when he came in, and he was trying to hire like 60 people a month when he let this past fall.
Wow.
But he said, and it was kind of scary, like, please don't change your standards. I mean, that's one of the things that
kind
of scares me across the country, is that people are changing their standards in order to bring in more recruits. But I mean, other than like, okay, maybe weed doesn't count as much as it used to back in the day. But other than that, like, well, how are you changing your standards? Cause that's scary. Sure. But I think I want to say we were somewhere around 250 sworn deputies. I don't know. They also have the jail. I don't know how many correctional officers they have. But I certainly don't remember all in civilian and everything. But I think we were around between 250 and 275 sworn deputies.
All right. Yeah. So academy life, you know, was it what you thought it was going to be?
I would say no, because I didn't, you know, certainly not police academy movie days, you know, which dating both of us by mentioning that. But yes. And I knew it wouldn't be a joke, so I'm kidding about that. But I didn't know if it was going to be just full on drill sergeant boot camp style, or I didn't expect it to be lax. But it wasn't as stringent maybe as I expected it to be in terms of boot camp style.
Yeah.
But certainly that, you know, yes, you had a uniform and you had to look a certain way, and you had to, you know, certainly they would have dinged the heck out of you if you'd been late. Or, and what I love about the police academy is there are physical standards that you have to, or at least they were, I think, feel like all of that's way too lax now. But because they don't want to hurt people's feelings or something, but, you know, there was the physical aspect of it. And I went into it I wanted to be held accountable to being fit, and in shape. And I liked that part of it a lot with all the physical activities we would do. I mean, I would show up, and if the academy didn't start until 1 o'clock that day, because we were going to do night things, I would go for a run before the academy started that day, regardless of whatever we were doing. So certainly now I'm much older and 3 kids and running a business, who has time? I still work out, but I worked out much more back then. It was not as stringent as I expected it to be. And yet I still towed the line on the rules and the paramilitary aspects of it.
You didn't shave your head.
I did not. No, okay. I did. I used to have really long hair, and I got it really short at the time, but I never could bring myself to actually shaving my head. Yeah.
So how many females were in your class?
We'll be right back.
Today's episode is sponsored by the thrilling audiobook Avenging Adam, book one in the FBI canine thriller series written by author Jodi Burnett. Sparks fly between hotshot FBI agent Rick Sanchez and no-nonsense FBI canine handler Kendra Dean as they chase a ruthless serial killer. Witness an electrifying blend of suspense, romance, and redemption, where internal conflicts challenge our heroes as much as their target does. Will they catch the killer before it's too late? Grab Avenging Adam now. It's more than a story. It's an experience. Get 50% off the Avenging Adam audiobook at jodi-burnett.com/copsandwriters.
We kind of talked about this before, and I got that question. I'm like, dang it. I think it was certainly the minority.
Yeah.
There was one other lady that moved down from Ohio. She was an experienced law enforcement officer. Like, she had no business being put through an academy because she knew what she was doing, but she did it. And I highly respected her for it. We lost touch, but she's somebody I wish I would have kept in touch with more, especially given the challenges I faced once I got into the sheriff's office. But I can't remember, like maybe 4 out of, we had 30 to 40, I think, in our academy class. I wish I remembered this, but isn't it funny how those details fade away?
Oh yeah, they sure do. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So and as far as like physical standards, what I have seen through the years, I started in 95. And when I started, what I loved about the physical standards, you know, you took a PT test as part of getting hired. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter what you looked like. It didn't matter what your gender was. It didn't matter. It was like, can you jump over that 6-foot wall in under 30 seconds? Can you run, you know, a half a mile in under 4 minutes? And it doesn't matter how much money you had in your wallet. It doesn't matter what you look like or who you prayed to or whatever. And that's the way it should be. But now the best way I could put it is they're dummying it down. And they started doing that a while ago. You know, I'll give you an example. Yeah. You know, they're like, well, we should do an obstacle course. And it's like, okay. Because I still remember the one that I had was a flex arm hang. You had to hang on a chin-up bar for 45 seconds. You couldn't let your chin go down. Mm-hmm. Then from there, you had the dummy drag, and then you had to jump over the wall. Then you did the half-mile run under 4 minutes. And if you failed any of it, you were done. Just, you're out. Now it's like, a lot of the females couldn't do the 6-foot wall. It wasn't a cyclone fence or whatever, but we're not going to dummy it down on the street. And then some of the big and some of the big muscle heads couldn't support their body weight for 45 seconds on the chin-up bar. Because there was two guys ahead of me that were like a lot bigger than me. And I thought, yeah, well, I was working out all the time, you know, blah, blah. Both of them, boom, boom. They didn't last more than like 15 seconds. And I'm just like, oh God, I'm so screwed. But you know, you just do it. But
yeah,
you know, it's like, okay, now we're going to do an obstacle course. And I'm like, okay, cool. So the Fire and Police Commission handpicked. It was kind of like a lottery where they're just going to pick you if you're working to run this obstacle course. And they just wanted a baseline. Well, I'm working midnight to eight. I'm dog tired. Whatever. I get a call and it's like, go to the academy. And I'm like, why? It's like, all right. So I go, and it was a gal that I knew, one of the secretaries from the Fire and Police Commission. Hey, Pat, how are you doing? I'm like, good. She said, you're going to run an obstacle course today. I'm like, what? I mean, I got all my gear, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ugh. I said, could I at least take my belt off? And she said, sure. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I stowed my that stuff. So I'm wearing combat boots and the rest of the you know, uniform. And I go through it, and I let myself slip physically, let my physicality slip a little bit when I was working late shift. I had kids. I didn't sleep. I still worked out, but it's just
possible.
It's not the same. So
no.
I go through it, and she's like, pretty good. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, you're like the second or third best time we've had so far. And I'm like, I suck. How could this be? And at the time, I was like in my mid-30s. And I'm like, I mean, some 21-year-old kid can't beat the snot out of me in this course. That's scary.
Yeah, I remember our...
It got worse, though, because I'm at the academy for some kind of training, and there's a bunch of recruits in their little recruit outfits standing, you know, waiting to get inspected. And I'm looking at some of the guys. They've got, like, Santa Claus bellies. I mean, like, hanging over their belts. And I have a buddy that's a sergeant there, and I said, oh, this is your new crop. You have fun with that. And he said, no, they're graduating in a week. I'm like, he said, I've got full grown men that can't do one push-up.
Now, and these are the people who are supposed to protect you and fight for you. And yeah, that is. Well,
those are also the people that are going to escalate when it comes to the force continuum. They're going to be the ones who are going to go towards more, maybe not lethal, but sometimes lethal force when, you know what, if you could actually wrestle with this person and get them down and get them handcuffed, you know, fight's over. We're done. You know, but instead you keep on ramping it up because you don't have the physicality to do the job.
So
they think they're doing something great by doing that, but they're, it's not good. But I'll get off my soapbox.
No, well, I totally agree with you. I've never, ever, and I will strongly say, and I care not if I offend a single female out there to say this, there are no such thing as different standards for men and women. Because like I said, and we agree, I mean, a fight is a fight. The street is the street. Yeah. I mean, there's no, it's not like somebody's going to go easier on you because you're a female or because you can't fight or whatever the reason is. I passed the SWAT team trial on the same standards as the guys. I mean, and I would expect it to be nothing else. How could you possibly respect me as an operator if I'm not being held to the same standard as you? Yeah. But also from a safety perspective and for your community, I mean, I will get on the soapbox with you and talk about it until the sun comes up and the crows sing that, I mean, the rooster sings that, and longer, that 100% you should never change that standard. And too many places, I remember shortly after I got out of the, at the sheriff's office, it was right before I started law school and I was teaching, I filled in for somebody teaching at a community college at their police academy. And I said something and I was just joking about like, well, you know, better be careful or you'll get some push-ups. And they said, oh no, they can't do that to us anymore. They can't give us any kind of push-ups. It's, and I, are you kidding me? Like, no, no, no. And it hurts people's feelings or, you know, like an hour obstacle course mentioning that we prove like the narcotics or the SWAT guys, a couple of them proved a point how pathetically low the standard was for our obstacle course. They did the whole thing backwards, ran the whole thing backwards and still came in under the time threshold. And that was 20 years ago. And, you know, and it's just, they don't even hardly have that, those standards now.
No. And, you know, and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff, you know, reform the police, you know, better training, better this, better that. But they keep on saying that, but they don't do it.
Right.
You know, because, you know, it's like we up here, we have called, our like physical training for like arresting people or whatever is DAT, mm-hmm. defense and arrest mm-hmm. techniques. Mm-hmm. You know, people have different acronyms for it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a court defensible way of punching, kicking, you know, mm-hmm. you know, whatever to get somebody into handcuffs, more or less. Mm-hmm. And a few years back, probably about, well, more than a few, probably about 10 years, the national trend was going towards ground fighting, because almost every fight, inevitably, mm-hmm. you wind up on the ground.
Yep.
So some really basic, like, jujitsu stuff, mm-hmm. you know, joint locks, you know, how to yep. get out of a headlock, you know, the mm-hmm. stuff that we didn't train before. And right. our department refused to do it. They said, well, people are going to get hurt when we're training them. And I'm just like,
they're getting hurt yeah. anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, they're getting hurt in training, they're getting hurt on the street. Yeah.
That's when things go sideways on the street, when you have somebody that is not trained properly. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. anything can happen. You could be trained till, you know, you could be Bruce frickin' Lee, but weird shit happens. And
yeah,
you know, that's reality.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's go back here.
I know. Okay. I
know. So you go on field training. Did you go solo right after field training? Most of these sheriff's departments, I think, are one person mm-hmm. squads, right?
Yes. Yes. The solo on my own. I remember this distinctly. New Year's Day, first call in the car by myself. And I get the 3P to 3A shift, which I was so happy about, because that's like the fun shift that gets busy the whole time, you know. Sure. And first call I got by myself was shots fired into an occupied home and the shooter's on scene. And I was less than 5 minutes away. And so I was like heading out to my and I go to turn around and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Cause I mean, I knew some people who had struggled in the field training program because they were bad with directions. Like they, and you know, when you're in the county, like you got to be able to get to, you know, you can't always sure. stop and pull over and pull out the map, but I've always been really good at that. And so I didn't have to pull out the map. I knew exactly. I just turned around and like, I was like, holy, oh my gosh. And thankfully, even though it didn't take me long to get there, by the time I got there, the shooter was gone. Nobody was killed. But I mean, I just couldn't believe, like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. And I think the rest of the shift was dead that day. But yeah, the first call, certainly the pucker factor was at 100%.
Yeah. You know, I distinctly remember pulling out of the driveway at the district station by myself. For us, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they didn't let you go out one man until you were done with probation. Mm. I was in one of the worst areas of the city. It was, they're almost all two man cars because of the safety factor. Mm-hmm. You know, that it just made sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think somebody called it sick or whatever the, you know, who knows what. Mm-hmm. And I'm just pulling out there and I'm like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. This is very real right now. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, plenty of times never... when, yeah, always on ourself. And in the county where you could be out in the middle of the night and it's very rural. I remember one time pulling somebody over and I was in patrol, I mean, only for a year before I went to the narcotics unit. So this was in this year. And it was on this highway out in the country, no spotlight, no street light. So pitch black. And I run the guy and he comes back with a warrant and I'm having to wait. And so it comes back with a warrant. So they immediately dispatch somebody, because we definitely had a strong policy. And me being a female, I'm not stupid. Like, I'm not going to put hands on somebody. And it was a guy that was arresting. And I was not going to put hands on without backup. And so
absolutely.
You know, I was really good at, people would say, oh, did you get in a lot of fight? People always saying, oh, did you get in a lot of fights? Did you shoot anybody? Thankfully, no. But also the fact that I didn't undercover for most of that changed my interactions with people. But sure. Yeah, I remember my verbal judo skills were strong that night, because he's like, what's taking? So, oh my gosh, this ditch. But you know, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm covering up my mic as though I needed, oh, dispatch is taking forever. I'm so sorry. You know, we have to always just check things and they're taking forever. I'm so sorry. They're taking forever. And then as soon as my backup showed up, I'm like, okay, you're under arrest. There's a warrant. And so, I mean, but yeah, that was plenty of times where I thought, oh crap. Or the times you're pulling up on a house for a call and all of a sudden you get that feeling of, I remember pulling up to a mobile home one time thinking, like, I needed to make sure my backup was with me. You just get that feeling like,
yeah,
this does not feel right. And I am not walking up to that house. I'm not walking up to that door unless, I mean, I remember we came up with a plan of like, I don't really want to walk straight up to the door. We need to come from the side.
And oh, sure. Yep.
I mean, it was just, I still remember, like, it just did not, and it turned out to be nothing, but it was I just, as soon as we were pulling up to the house, like, you know, again, pitch black in the country. And I waited for backup to before we did anything. But anyway, yeah, plenty of those stories. Yeah,
absolutely. So you do your time about a year in like street patrol.
Yep.
And then you went over to narcotics. How did you wind up over there?
They didn't have a female. It's that simple.
Okay, so, because, yeah, I thought, you know, that's unusual. Unless you have a hookup of some kind, you know, you've got a rabbi, you got a friend, you got somebody in upper ranks.
Yep.
That's like, hey, I've got this cool spot for you in plain clothes, narcotics. That's a pretty coveted spot. A lot of people would want that. And for a rookie to get it, I mean, we could go into it a little bit more, but I know agencies sometimes will take them because you have to fill a slot.
Yeah.
You know, okay, it makes sense that I have a female that's 25 years old that kind of looks like a college kid. Mm-hmm. This is perfect for what we need.
Yeah. Well, sadly, I didn't do any of the college. I did a few college things. Like we were trying to, this was, and right after, not long after 9/11, I remember we had a kid that was selling fake IDs, which became a very, I mean, not that you don't really ever care about that, but the Fed started really caring about
it. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. And he was selling really good, like fake IDs, like driver's license level. And, you know, and so that became a federal case. So you talk about that kid, like a pucker factor. Like when we finally arrested him, I was like, you don't understand. This is not my case. This is a federal case and you are effed. And it's, you know, just some stupid college kid trying to make, you know, some extra bucks. And the next thing you know, he's facing federal felony charges. And I don't remember what happened to it after that. I don't even remember if the feds followed through on it. But I mean, that is I used to tell people like, look, you should be scared if you have a case against me, but you should be really scared if the feds come after you because you don't have the same type of disclosure rights. Yep. I mean, you talk about, you know, not to do politics, but the whole January 6th people are like throwing people in jail and not letting them have any like day in court and all that. Like they can do that at the federal level. You can't do it at the state level. Anyway. Right. So, it was about a year. Well, I guess I went. Yeah, let's just say about a year. I mean, maybe it was a month. I don't know, but they didn't have a female. And I also think there is some value in bringing in somebody new because they're not known yet. No, you haven't had a time to arrest everybody that gets arrested, and it's easier for you to like go into the known drug spots because nobody's ever seen you. Because you get moved around in the county a good bit. And the way our jurisdiction worked, and I mean, our county worked. And so, you know, 5 years in, like I'm in every neighborhood at some point. And sure. Like, I'm not the normal white dude walking around. So people will be like, who's that little white girl, that deputy that showed up? So, you know, and you don't realize what they do. I mean, the career criminals remember. And so I think there's some value in putting in somebody that's unknown early on in a unit like that. And then why did I get it? It's because they didn't have a female. But and I know we could talk about this, is the value of having experience, more experience than I had when you go into any type of specialized unit. Certainly there's significant value in having more experience than I had in being prepared for what, from my perspective, and being prepared for what the job is going to do to you, in terms of how do you then handle even more of the crap or the just, there's no good parts of narcotics investigations. I mean, there's just no good. Whereas
for our listeners and watchers, you know, your narcotics, how big of a unit was it? It couldn't be that big.
Not big, sadly, not big at all. Well, we had an undercover side and a uniform side.
Okay.
And so meaning that the uniform side would focus more of their time. They weren't like general patrol. They would focus on the high crime, high drug areas, and they would stay just right there. Or they would be support for us if we were doing. So, for example, if I was doing we do either buy walks or buy bus. Buy walks are where you do the drug. We, in our jurisdiction, we had to have 3 buys from a house or structure before we could get a search warrant. We would do those with buy walks. I go then get my search warrant and we come back and we execute it with the SWAT team. And then we blah, 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 find the drugs, arrest the people. Buy walks are where somebody would go in undercover to a high crime, high drug area, I'd buy the crack or whatever. And then I'd, you know, on the mic, the bug, I would say, okay, looks good. And then we'd roll out and then the uniforms guys come in and arrest the people who we just, who just sold it to us.
Okay.
So undercover side, we had, I want to say at top, at peak, it was, I think, six. And then at one point it was just me.
Jeez.
On the low end. And then, but that didn't last too long. But yeah, there was a time where I was the only narcotics investigator, which was sad. And then,
and what people don't understand is when you're going to buy drugs from somebody, you're wearing probably like jeans, t-shirt, try to look like a crackhead. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't have a vest, you don't have a gun, you don't have an ID. I mean, you're just Jane Citizen.
Yeah. I did start off wearing an ankle holster.
Okay.
And then I got super close to being searched one time.
Oh yeah.
And I never did that again. And then I switched to, it was called a Kel-Tec P380, like a super slim that fit inside my waistband. But again, I never put my, when I was wearing that, I was never in a position where I felt like I was going to get a pat down because there's no way to explain that. And I bought drugs too many times with somebody holding a gun or with a rifle right next to them. And there's no chance they're not going to either beat the crap out of me or shoot me in that situation. So while I did think I was a little bit too much bulletproof still at the time, I did enough of that to know these guys will shoot me or beat me to a pulp if they need to. So yeah, I had plenty. It was just nuts. Just nuts.
I mean, in a perfect world, you know, you have all kinds of backup around the area. You're never quote unquote on your own. You know, you're not going to go into a house by yourself.
Hopefully. Oh no, never without backup and support. And yeah, but still, I mean, they're not right there, and it doesn't take long to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So yeah,
things happen really fast. You know, and as far as like, you know, we could debate the, you know, it's like, I understand the reasons why they would put you in with not a lot of experience, but what I have seen through, you know, 25 years was, okay, they would grab somebody, and especially a female, and this might sound sexist, but you'd have these like creepy bosses that thinking they're going to get lucky or something like that. They wanted cute girls around. And I'm just like, okay, that's not right. And we all knew what they were doing. But they would get all the off days that they wanted. They would get all kinds of special stuff. And they're working this super high speed thing. But like everything else, nothing lasts forever. Mr. Yeah. Creepy boss guy goes by the wayside. He retires. He goes to a different unit. Or a new chief comes in and says, you know what? We don't need this narcotics unit.
Yeah.
If we don't arrest people for drugs, then we don't have a drug problem. We actually had that happen. You know, it's like, poof, it's all gone. You know, it's like, wow. But... Yeah. So what happens then is you've got 10, 15 years in doing this undercover, high speed, really cool stuff. Now you're back on the street. You're nobody special. And you're just sitting there with your thumb up your butt going, I don't remember how to do any of this. You have to get retrained again. Or what I've seen is they take promotion exams. Hey, now I'm a sergeant, but I've had zero reps on the street.
Yeah.
I mean, I could write up a drug arrest or a warrant blindfolded.
Yeah.
But the other 80 or 90% of police work, I'm clueless.
Yeah.
So I think it's a disservice. You know, there's I'm up on that soapbox one more time. You know, it's like, I think for something like that, rotation in a perfect world, you rotate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we didn't have, even though I'm an undercover narcotics, we were not the type of county or the department to have like deep undercover long-term things. And I wouldn't have done that. I mean, I probably would have thought at the time it's cool. And it applied to the DEA, and the DEA does do that. So maybe there was a chance in an alternate world where I would have done, but like, especially in hindsight, like that is deep, dangerous, dirty, lose yourself, go crazy kind of world. But I do think you're right in the sense that you go from the narcotics world. And it's like, I don't want to, not to discredit, it's just a completely different frame of mind, the way that you hide, the way that you're not out in the public. And then you do that I did it for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And then you come back out. And I did go back to patrol for about 3 months before I left the sheriff's office. And like, I didn't remember what paperwork to do if you had somebody that died and like, oh, it's natural causes. And then you got to fill out the paperwork and wait for somebody to come get the body or whatever. And like, I had to have literally somebody, I used to have like my patrol call originally, I had a little file thing. This is back in the paper days. Now you probably just type it up on your computer, but like I didn't have my little file thing set and somebody had to bring me the paperwork and and my ear wasn't even tuned to the radio the way that it needed to be. Like I got there like, oh, one time, like Bridget, they're calling you like, oh, sorry. Okay. Delta 9, I'm on en route. And you know, so there's that almost that there needs to be like a transition between because you're just putting everybody at risk. And, but that's just not the way it works. You're like, hey, on Monday, you're going back to patrol. Like, oh, okay. Now I did ask my story is that towards the end, I was like, F all of you. I walked into my captain's office and I said, I want off narcotics unit and SWAT team right now. And I want day shift. And he knew it was kind of knew what was happening. He's like, you got it. Okay. You start Monday. And so I did have a radical shift, but
so you did narcotics for about 2 years. You said 2.5.
That was about 3 years and I was on and then I joined the narcotics unit, I want to say in like November. And then I got on the SWAT team in, I think around January.
Oh, so you're doing both at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So because you didn't have a full-time SWAT team.
No, we were a call out team or part-time team, however you want to call it. Cause we didn't have, thankfully didn't have the need for a full-time SWAT team, although we did train a lot. We had a great sheriff at the time who really put a lot of time and dedication into training hours for everybody, good equipment for everybody, and then definitely gave the SWAT team a lot of training time. I mean, as you should, but.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So you go over to SWAT while you're doing the narcotics stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge pull on you personally. Were you married? Did you have kids back then?
No kids, thank goodness. A long-term boyfriend, not, I mean, I thought at the time I'm never going to be married, but with my for a long time, you know, and then that changed. I mean, obviously I've been married a long time now, but not with that person, but great person. We parted ways, but yeah, I was with someone, but no kids, thankfully.
Because when you're doing that kind of work, you know, like you said, it kind of, it messes with your head and you know, I was used to, you know, we had a full-time SWAT team. We had a full-time gang squad. We had a full-time narcotics, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you really didn't get called into work unless the world was coming to an end, you know, or something really big was going on. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to get the phone call. But most part, they would just farm out the people that were already there. Mm-hmm. Okay, you work midnight to 8. Well, now you're working till indefinitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the shit was hitting the fan. Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. That's just the way we did it. But we had the resources where a lot of other departments don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're on the SWAT teams, you could be in the middle of whatever, and you have to be ready just to jump off and do whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you're in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and the beeper goes off, also dating myself. I don't know how they do it nowadays, but the beeper would go off and get called in for something. I remember one time that was a guy that was on, who was high on meth. That's back when meth was just first starting, or at least when it made its way to the Southeast. And he was actively shooting a rifle into the neighborhood. And for people who don't know, rifle rounds go through almost anything.
They like go through a lot of stuff. Yes.
Special vests for rifle rounds. We would wear like ceramic plated, like steel plates, like not things that are easy to wear, but that's the only thing that will stop a rifle round. Like a normal, my house that I'm in right now, cause I'm working from home today, not a rifle round would go through multiple walls before it would stop. And so this guy was shooting rifle out into the neighborhood and, that was one of the middle of the night calls we got. But yeah, I mean, we would execute search warrants. The SWAT team executed our search warrants. I know there are some narcotics units that do a lot of SWAT type training and they execute their own, like, you know, do their own entries. We use SWAT team for that. So
yeah, we went back and forth in our agency.
So we would do like SWAT team. I'd put my SWAT hat on, although I was the only chick on the team. So I never got to, I got to do one entry ever. Even though I trained just like they did, I was the equipment van girl, and we called it the bread van. But
so did we.
I would have my SWAT hat on and my SWAT gear, and then that would be over, and I would stow all that back in my car, and then I'd put my proverbial narcotics hat on, and then we would take over and then do all the narcotics stuff. And then, you know, sometimes that, as you know, in narcotics world, that stuff flips and somebody's like, yeah, I'll take you to who I get this stuff from. Right. And then the next thing you know, you're working 24, 36 hours straight.
Yeah.
Cause you got to work it while it's hot. And
absolutely,
those are long, not fun days. But
why did you want to go to SWAT?
Physically, I thought that sounded really cool. And again, I knew it would set me apart from other people going to the feds. So I thought that's what I still want. At the time, I thought that's what I wanted to do.
So
still.
Kind of a resume builder too?
Yeah. And I just thought it was super cool. And yeah, it was.
Of course, you got machine guns and you get the like flashbangs and all
the
kinds of
training of
cool
it.
Stuff.
And you know, the fact that I was the only female doing it and I could do it. I mean, I physically could do it. I mean, was I the same? Could I fight the way that Brian Gaynor could? I mean, I'm not that, God bless him. And he's still alive. Thank goodness. You know, but he's a former Marine. I mean, we obviously looked very different, but you know, we could complete the same trainings. We completed the same O course. We competed in the same SWAT competition together. I mean, okay. All the things. And like, yeah, it was awesome. I got to train all the time. I loved it. Yeah, just resume builder and just a really awesome thing to do.
Yeah. You know, for our department, when I first started, there was zero qualifications to get on the SWAT team, except for you had to be in the club. Yeah, you had to be one of the good old boys.
Well, ultimately, I'm not on SWAT team because I'm not really part of the club.
Yeah. So ours is called the Tactical Enforcement Unit, and they call it Tick and Talk, the inner circle and the outer circle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to discredit these guys. They did amazing work. They're super high speed professionals. Mm-hmm. But when I first started, I thought, man, that'd be really cool. And then mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm not fitting into their mold. And mm-hmm. secondly, I'd have to work early shift, which was like 4 p.m. till midnight or some mm-hmm. somewhere in that ballpark. And we're starting to have kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, it's more important for me to stay late shift, midnight to 8, because I can do all the kids stuff.
Yeah.
So I chose my children over doing, you know, the SWAT thing or the motorcycle thing or the whatever mm-hmm. thing, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. so that's the direction that I went. But where I worked, there was no physical standards. Now, some of these guys were like studs. They played in the NFL. They, you know, or college football. I mean, and they kept themselves up. I mean, they were just unbelievable athletes. Mm-hmm. And some weren't. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, my friend that I bowl with on Tuesdays or play darts with or whatever, mm-hmm. there was that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And then we got a new chief and he's like, okay, this is bullshit. And you don't have any minorities. So he flooded it with minorities that didn't even want to do the job.
Ugh.
And, you know, it just became, yeah, I have a good friend that was on this show. And as a cop, he wanted to be on the SWAT team. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was a Marine, kept himself in really good shape, great arrest record. Just everything was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And no, he was just stonewalled. Mm-hmm. And the new chief came in and he's like, he just gets promoted to sergeant. The new chief comes in. He says, okay, on this piece of paper, it says you're going to District 7 late shift. You're going to SWAT. And he's like, and he told the chief, he said, no.
Well,
I want to learn how to become a sergeant first.
That's nuts, because to me, that would be like saying, I know you wanted to have an epidural to have a baby, but now I'm not going to give you one. Like, I know women who have had babies without an epidural. I'm not one of them. But from what I understand is you 100%, that has to be, your mindset. Now, could I have had babies without it? Yes, I could have. But I would not have wanted to. And it's a mindset. You have to want to be there because you will, the environment is tough. Working around these guys is tough. And then the situations that you face are tough. Yes. I mean, we almost killed many people. And, you know, only by twist of a second did we not have to kill a hostage taker or the guy shooting the rifle out in the neighborhood or so many situations. But that is a mindset thing. And I don't think you should ever put somebody on any specialized unit that they're not applying for, because every one of them requires, it is a mental choice that you should and must have to survive.
So there were physical requirements for you to get on the SWAT team. You had to pass, you know, it was like an obstacle course, run.
Grueling all day tryout. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We started with a run and then we drove somewhere. I don't remember I think we started with a run. We drove somewhere. We did the obstacle course. Obstacle course was same for me as it was for the guys. part of that is the dummy drag. And I was so dead with it. I just remember like digging my fingers into the heels of the dummy. Thank God it's not a real human person. I was able to dig my fingers into the fake feet of the dummy and drag them as far. I can't remember how far it was. It felt like a mile, get the dummy into the van. And I felt like I was never going to be able to like open my fingers again. And then we had to do a shooting, like a long range shooting. Then we had to do rappelling. And then at the end of all that was an interview. But yeah, I mean, I was the same standard, and it should never be any different ever.
Right.
Ever. I mean, unless you're having somebody that's part of the team that really just does like a tactical, not tactical, like a tech ops or something like that. And we didn't have that, but, I mean, even our volunteer EMT guys that were assigned to the team with us, or the doctor that was a volunteer that would go on calls with us sometimes, they still did the tryouts. Because they wanted to know they could do it.
Oh, okay.
They went with us on all training exercises because they needed to be part of it and run it and physically feel it. And, but I mean, they weren't required to, but anyway, yeah, I definitely had, there was a physical requirement. And I mean, going back to what you said, it is a Bubba's Club, no doubt. And I would not have been allowed into that Bubba's Club had I not had the very specific captain over me as a part of my, as my champion. Okay. I never would have, nobody else would have done it but him. And to be put it, and I'll say this, he's a Black man, and he started as a Black man in law enforcement. Oh, he just recently retired, then he got pulled back in to be sheriff. So, I mean, at least the 80s, if not the late 70s. And I don't want to, sorry, Sheriff Ganey, if I'm making you older than you are, I can't remember. All due respect. But, you know, he was a Black man in a small Southern town. When that was probably not an easy job for him.
Probably not.
So I would say that it wasn't for that very specific man. I never would have made SWAT team. They never would have put me on it. Because he remember they and my SWAT commander told me three explicit times, you are only on this team because the captain made me do it. Oof. So yeah, it is a bonus club.
But if you passed the physical requirements, you could shoot well, you could do everything. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why you shouldn't be on it.
Nope.
But yeah, but you know, you have to pass everything. That's
yeah. And I did it.
And I know our departments and other departments where to check boxes, they'll look the other way for certain things.
And I would never have wanted SWAT,
but other specialty units, you know, et cetera. You know, like motorcycles, you can either do it or you can't do it.
Right.
And right. Yeah. But I had a partner as a sergeant. She was a new promotion. She came from the motorcycles. And she passed it. She could ride a motorcycle like crazy. She was really, really good. But she was one of only a handful.
Yeah. Like I never would have tried out for the motorcycle unit because I don't ride a motorcycle. And I don't want to. Like that's just not like it's not my thing. And so also being a female in that position, I never would have wanted anything other than the same standard, the same expectations, the same rules, because it was already hard enough to be there. I mean, it's just never would I have, I mean, I never really achieved their, I don't know, the respect is not the right word, because some of them, I think they kind of sort of respected me, but I never would have achieved anything had it not been the same requirements by everybody. I mean, we competed in international SWAT Roundup Internationals in Orlando every year in November. We competed against international teams and many across the United States, but people from international countries like Germany, Sarajevo, I mean, amazing teams. I had to try out against my own SWAT team members to make the roundup, the competition team. I beat out at least half of my own teammates to make this competition team. And then we went and we placed in the top 20 or the top 10. So, I mean, physically, yes, there's, I was better than, or really, I just always probably tried harder than them because they could have been just as good as, if not better, if they tried. But I always tried. And so, yeah, physically, that was not the issue at all. My shooting skills were never the issue.
Okay. So, you know, what people don't realize too is most SWAT teams are very deeply mired in politics. You know, chiefs and sheriffs have a love-hate relationship with them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's super awesome when, you know, you conduct a search warrant, you breach the door, you get bad guys, everything's honky-dory.
Yep.
But if something goes sideways, now all of a sudden it's like, ooh, we really don't like them. Ooh, they look like they're the army, for God's sakes. They drive tanks around town.
And it's, oh my gosh.
You know,
so,
you know, and I know this from one of our chiefs that he hated the Bearcat. That's the armored vehicle, and it's a rescue vehicle. It's it's not a tank. We don't have machine guns sticking out of the sides, nothing like that. But it's also moving cover. I mean, it could be utilized for, you know, safe transport. There's 100 different reasons to have it.
Yeah.
But I had a barricaded subject, gonna kill mom, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was one of the handful of times that I actually called the TAC unit. And I'm like, yeah, this is a TAC setup. So I called. The chief would show up to every TAC setup like that, not to warrant service, but something like that in the community. You know, it's not 4 o'clock in the morning and you're breaching a door. This is in the middle of the day in like nice town USA. And my captain came out and she's like, and she never came out to scenes, never. And she's out there and I'm like, hi, ma'am, what are we doing? And she's like, oh, chief called. He's not going to like this. And I'm like, why? The Bearcat. And I'm like, and? I said, it has a very specific purpose. And I had to explain it to her. And I'm just like, and he comes out and right away he's like, yeah, the Bearcat. And I'm like, why do you have such a boner for the Bearcat? I don't understand it. But it's so full of politics. I mean, we had another chief that ordered the SWAT team to lay down cover fire. And it's they're all looking at each other like, we don't do that. Yeah, it's like we just don't shoot blindly into a house.
No.
But he got excited.
Talk about a lawsuit. Oh.
I know.
But... The lawyer in me is like, no.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to my interview with former SWAT and narcotics undercover sheriff's deputy, now attorney, Bridget Truxillo. If you want to see what happens next to Bridget, you are going to have to wait for next week for the exciting conclusion of my interview with Bridget. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Cops and Writers Podcast. If you haven't done so yet, can you take a minute and rate and review the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts? If you have already, thank you. As always, thank you for all of your support. And, of course, let's be careful.